before there were hashtags.
A dissection of pop culture past.
With Eric Dallinger.
And Carly Anna Billings.
Each week we hop in our time machine and take a look at the past of pop culture. Hello and welcome to the Before There Were Hashtags podcast. I am your host, Mr. Eric Dallinger, and I am here with my lovely, beautiful, energetic co-host, Miss Carly Billings.
What? That's me! Hello! Hello, everybody! Welcome back, or welcome to. Happy to be here, as always.
And also new audio. Who this?
Oh my goodness,
new microphone.
Gracious.
Who this?
What the heck? Moving up in the world? 6 episodes in and we're already moving up? Ugh. Who'd have thunk
whoa,
it? Amazing.
Whoa.
Amazing.
I do apologize for the shoddy audio in the past few episodes. My mic was not working as well as I wanted it to.
Hey, we all have those. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has those days, you know.
Everybody knows
what I'm talking about. Everybody gets that way. So.
Sometimes I'm in a jam, but then I make a plan. It might be crazy.
I do it anyway. Iconic.
When in doubt, did I ever tell you about the time in grade 12? I don't even know what the essay was about, but I literally in a formal essay, I put, we need to take the advice of Miss Hannah Montana and get the best of both worlds.
Oh my God. You were like, period.
Got an 80% on it. I remember that.
That is.
Can't tell you what the essay was about, but.
But you know that you had to quote Ms. Hannah Montana herself. With he got the best of both worlds. That is incredible.
Oh,
an icon, a legend for our time.
An icon.
I'm sure.
Legend.
I'm sure at one point a future theme on this podcast. So let's zip
for
it.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Can't talk about
they
it now.
Can't get for free. How are they gonna? They're not gonna buy the cow if they're gonna get the milk for free.
Oh my goodness. Miss Carly, how are you?
I'm doing great, Eric. Thanks for asking. Well, I mean, great is a relative term. I'm doing as great as can be, let's say.
Yeah, no.
I'm glad to be here with you, and doing this always puts a smile on my face. So.
Same. It's kind of the highlight of my day right now, or my week, because we are in a stay-at-home order.
Bear. Of course we are.
Thank you, Doug Board.
Yeah, it's a weird time to be doing anything, but it's nice that we can do this. That's for sure.
Yes, and we hope that we can bring a little light to your day, listeners.
Just, even if we put a teeny tiny smile on your face, even if it's the teeniest, tiniest smile in the world, it's good.
Just a little chuckle. Like, if we make one person laugh.
Even if you just, even one of those like silent, like, you know, one of those laughs, even that's great.
Like a V at the end of the Dynamite video.
Like you're scrolling TikTok and you think something's really funny, but you just go, that's that kind of laugh. That's a laugh. Even that laugh is good today. And we'll be glad to have gotten
it. So I've realized, too, that this podcast has become both a Britney stan podcast and a BTS stan podcast, because I'll find a way.
I will find a way to
edge it in there somehow.
You know, one of the things I love about you is that you are nothing if not dedicated to the things you love and the people you love. So if that is what this becomes, and it has, I'm along for the ride. I'm in.
I do love, you can like any artist you can find a podcast where it's just, I one time listened to a Hillary Duff podcast.
Oh my God.
Every episode was about like different eras of Hillary Duff's career.
That's incredible.
And I was obsessed.
That's incredible.
So you just got to search up any topic and you find a full, not just like a single podcast episode like us, but a full podcast topic on
it. there's something dedicated fully to that topic. And that's the fun thing about the internet and doing this is that there's always going to be like-minded people that are going to see you and appreciate you. So thanks for being here, friends. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We do appreciate it. We do have an Instagram account. I don't think I've ever shouted it out.
You gotta plug it. Plug it, baby. You do such a good job over there. I have nothing to do with that. Eric is all hands on deck over there, and it's incredible.
No, yes. That's not fully
yes,
true,
it's true.
A wink, wink, maybe a little bit true.
No, it's true.
So find us on Instagram at Before There Were Hashtags. You can write us in the DMs. You can comment on our pictures. It's kind of a little bit of an extension of the pod. You know, we post pictures of our pot picks every week. Sometimes if there's interesting facts, totally. I posted pictures of all the guest stars of the Pussycat Dolls after our Pussycat Dolls episode.
Oh, it was so awesome. So it's sort of
you get some extended information on the pod.
Totally. If you're like a visual person, that is the place to be. It's a nice little accompaniment to what we're doing here. And also, when we have guests, we had a guest 2 weeks ago. That was incredible. Miss Allie Withers. And you literally can go on our Instagram and see some cute pics of you, Eric, and Allie in a throwback pic, you know? So we are always posting neat, cool, extra stuff over there. And feel free to give us a follow. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the link is there, so you can quickly get to all the episodes from that Instagram. We also do have a Facebook page.
True.
It's not as extensive. It's generally just an extension of the Instagram account.
I mean, as most Facebook pages are at this time. You know what I mean? That's like what the gig is, baby.
But if you are not an Instagram girl, but a Facebook woman.
You're one of those Facebook fiends. You get over there.
Facebook fiends.
Yeah, get your butt over there. You can like it. Feel free. Follow along.
Too good. Too good.
We love it.
All right, friend. Should we start with gassing up the time machine?
Oh, hell yeah. Because you know what? Today's topic is a doozy. It's really... There's a lot to unpack with this big boy. And
oh my goodness.
It's such a thing.
The most probably the most hated movie of all time.
Famously argued that it is the worst movie of all time. Yeah, like just the worst movie that's ever been made as a movie. So it's...
And from some of the best source material.
Oh, that we will dive into it. It is so much. But you're right. In order to be able to get back and talk to the way back, we got to gas up our time machine, baby. Do you want to tell the folks at home how we do that?
Well, I'm setting my timer for 5 minutes, and we will talk about current pop culture. That's how we gas up the time machine, talking about what's currently going on in the pop culture sphere.
Woo!
All right.
We love it. We love to hear it.
Here we go. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right.
Yes.
So, I think the biggest thing that's happened in the last few days of during the recording of this podcast has been the first gay bachelor.
Oh, yes. That was a big thing. People were like, what the heck about this? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so... Colton Underwood, famous 2018 bachelor, came out of the closet
like,
as a gay
man. It's me. I'm here. I'm queer. And I'm ready to be that. And we're like, okay.
Good
on him.
We're happy for Colton.
Of
we're
course.
Happy for Colton.
We're happy for
pod.
Anybody who can live their truth and be their authentic self. That's the best way to be. You know,
did you watch the GMA interview?
I didn't. I saw the memes though. With most things.
You can get all the news from the memes.
Hey baby, the memes will tell me the news I need to know. And then if I need to know further news, then I will find the sources.
You know what? There is really nothing too crazy in the interview. He still seems like a little nervous with that.
Like, well, it's a scary thing also being that, like, being already famous and also being famous for going on a love contest where you're finding a woman.
He's also famously the virgin.
Yes. Well, we now know why. Like, hello. Makes sense. Hello.
I mean, I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be this person, but I'm going to be this person. Yeah. I wasn't surprised.
No, but I don't want to be this person either. But was anyone surprised? Like, personally, for me, I'm never surprised when someone comes out or transitions or anything because I'm...
No, it's a whole new world.
I assume everyone's queer until proven otherwise. Like... I'm just like, everyone's gay and having a good time, unless you tell me you're not. And then I'm like, oh, all right, maybe for now. You know, that's kind of how I feel. Not to like devalue anyone's, you know, identities. But like I just see it the opposite way, because I've just had too many people in my life.
It's also so. we don't really need to put huge labels on it or anything.
That's what I think too.
I just think it's very interesting, the reactions to, because some people are not well. There's also rumors that he's getting his own Netflix show.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good.
But here's, some people are upset about this because, you know, it's another, like, because it's another, like, white, straight passing.
Oh, well, I agree. That's a problem. Though I don't know that, him having a show equates to, like, that he's the problem, you know? I think any representation is important, though.
Yes.
Of course, like, more queer folks of color, please, everywhere. The end.
I agree. It's like one of those things where it's like, I don't have a problem with him having a TV show, but it's like we need more representation, more different representation. It's not about taking it away from Colton, but it's about having more, right?
Yeah.
But it's also interesting because it's supposed to be him and Gus Kensworthy.
Oh,
the famous Olympic skier, that he's gonna be like his gay guide.
Oh my god, that's weird. But also, that to me feels very this podcast. It feels very before there were hashtags, doesn't it? Feels like very like the first time of queer, like when Queer Eye happened, you know? Almost, yeah. Doesn't that kind of feel that, like, it gives me that vibes.
Maybe a little bit. I did think of the memes. One of the memes was really funny. It was like, I can already feel Ryan Murphy writing him apart right now.
Oh my god, yes. Yes. That's pretty true.
And I did see a really funny meme that was like, it was Britney Spears, Ryan Gosling, and Ellen. And Ryan Gosling's giving Ellen a hug. And it's under Britney, it's like, feminine gay men that didn't have a choice. And then it's like... And then Gus Kensworthy, then Ryan Gosling being like, masculine gay men. And then he's hugging Ellen, and then Ellen's the world. So it's just like how like the world has embraced.
Yeah.
Just like very hetero acting.
Totally.
Homosexuals.
That's very, yes.
I did think that meme was pretty
good.
That
is a pretty good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a wild time to be, in the public eye at all, but also it's a wild thing to be in the public eye and then just have to tell everybody what they think about you is just not what the reality is, you know? And that is a gift though, too. That's a gift to be able to live your truth. Oh, there it is.
All right. That is us filling up our time machine. I should mention that he did apologize to his, ex-fiance who he stalked and had a restraining
order. Yes, that's all.
Mention that.
I did.
To be fair, that he's not a perfect person.
Correct. Me as someone who...
We can celebrate him being his true self without condoning all the bad stuff, too, because there were
always
some bad stuff.
As someone who doesn't follow The Bachelor, I literally only saw those things in memes, and I did forget about that, which also makes me go, oh, no. But yeah. For sure.
I didn't watch his season, but I did watch the season where he is one of the contestants.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was like one of the boys on
The one before he's The Bachelor.
And then he was on Bachelor in Paradise, and I watched those because they were in the same summer, and I was doing a contract and everybody watched it. But then
group
I didn't
activities.
Watch his actual season. Yeah. But I did see the season finale because I hung out with friends and they wanted to watch it.
That's so funny. Because I think...
I can watch Bachelor... with other people, but I can't watch it by myself.
That's totally fair. I feel like that is a show I could really get into if like I had a partner who was like, we need to watch The Bachelor. I'd be like, I guess, like, I'll watch it. I love reality TV. Like, I'll just do it, you know. I'm not gonna say no.
I can get into it like sports.
Yeah,
like, where it's like,
yeah.
I with a communal
like it's
aspect,
an event.
I can get into
yeah.
it. But by myself, I'm like, nah,
yeah, by myself,
I can't
I'm not about to turn on
myself.
Baseball, though I love it. It's the best sport. It's one of the best. But I'm not going to watch it at home by myself. You know, I'm not my dad.
All right. So we should tell the audience as we blast off what our topic is today.
Oh, hell yeah.
The most hated movie
of
all
time. You know, a famously terrible, terrible movie. Based on a beloved children's series, and it's just
The Last Airbender.
Yes, The Last Airbender movie. Shudders at the thought.
I saw this movie in theaters.
I didn't. I saw it like a couple years afterwards, but I'm sad that you saw it in theaters. That makes me sad for you.
Me and my brother who famously we have very different tastes. Like, me and my brother do not agree on anything in terms of, like, culture enjoyment.
You have very different tastes. That's a perfect way
love
to say
him.
It.
Just yeah, very different that's a perfect tastes. Way to say it. This was, Avatar was one of those few things that we agree on as being, like, primo, amazing, good TV.
Yeah.
And this movie just, it butchers it. It is the worst.
Yeah, I bet you, yeah, you both are probably excited. Like, this is great. We're excited. This is going to be a fun time. And then you had to watch this movie. So I'm my condolences to anyone who has had to see this movie.
Sit through an hour and 40 minutes of this BS of a movie.
It's, yeah, for a movie that only, this 2010 American action adventure fantasy film only has like an hour and 40 minute like runtime, like not even a 2 hour runtime, which for an action movie is surprising because action movies take time because there's a lot of time when you're doing action where nothing else can happen, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Also, let's not the biggest problem with this film ultimately is that it tries to cram in 9 hours of TV into an hour and a half of movie.
Yeah.
A 22-episode season was crammed
into an hour 40.
It's
barely an hour 40. Like a soft hour 40. Like it's not... Yeah. Oy, oy, oy.
If you could see our faces, we are shaking
both of us just not having it. So it was written, co-produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, who is a famous director. Folks probably know him from
Signs,
The Sixth Sense, did Unbreakable.
Yeah.
He did the trilogy, The Visit, Split, Glass. You know, he's like the big deal. People love this guy.
He's the big deal.
He's like known for his supernatural plots and his like twist endings. Like that's the like meme of him is that if like you do something that's not expected, it's your M. Night Shyamalan twist. Like that's a thing, you know, in the cultural zeitgeist.
News Weekly called him the next Spielberg.
Yeah, he's like an incredible filmmaker, a storyteller that people like really like his work, you know, just generally like his work is great.
When I think of The Sixth Sense though, all I think about is the SNL skit by The Lonely Island when it's like,
yes,
when Bruce Willis is dead at the end of Sixth Sense, in my pants.
Well, I mean, The Sixth Sense is like, for us, it's not a cultural touchstone because we weren't of the age or of the time, right? Like, it's too early for us. Like, our connection to The Sixth Sense is that The Lonely Island Italian singing about Sixth Sense, and like knowing the twist ending, you know what I mean? So, but if you like, imagine being like a first time audience member of this film, and you're like sitting. As you did for The Last Airbender, just in the theater, like the twist at the end of The Sixth Sense, you'd be like, whoa, unless you're really good at movies. Because sometimes people are good at movies and can guess like how plots are laid out. I just find the more I like learn about TV and film writing and stuff, I'm better at that. But I don't know.
So, yeah. So this film is based off of the 2005 TV show Avatar The Last Airbender, co-created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko.
Totally. Specifically, this movie is based on the first season from that gorgeous
This movie
show.
Is based... Gorgeous. Yeah. Just, like, to give it, like, context, like, the list of awards of this... of the TV show is extensive. It won the 59th Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Animation and was nominated for Outstanding Animated Program.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it is Emmy Award winning TV show, and it is largely considered to be one of the best TV shows of all time and enjoyed by adults and children alike. It is definitely definitely geared towards more family viewing, totally. But deals with some really, really heavy subject matter, yeah. And deals with it well for a TV show, a children's TV show.
Does such a good job. It's very approachable. It's very lovely. It has a lot of heart.
Deals with subjects of loss, genocide, mm-hmm. imperialism. I honestly say it's brilliant.
Yeah.
No matter what age you are, you must watch the show.
It's for you.
Actually, so good. It is my pop pick.
Yes. Okay. So, spoiler alert. But yes, absolutely.
Just kidding. Well, it is my pop pick, but it won't be my pop pick for this week.
I mean, it's your everyday pop pick that you. It's the pop pick that you don't voice every week because it's obvious, you know.
And so the series is about a 12-year-old named Aang, who is the basis of the world is that there's four main nations:
the Fire Nation.
The Water Tribe, the Air Nomads, and the Earth Kingdom. Yes. And within these countries, some people have the magical ability to bend that element. So they can control fire, they can control air.
They can harness
air.
It, they can use it. It's incredible.
So on and so forth. But the Avatar, who is this 12-year-old named Aang, he has the ability to harness all four elements. And it is his job to... as it says in the opening sequence, Aang can save the world.
Well, because he's the last of the airbenders too. That's the thing.
And he's also So there's been the Fire Nation has tried to take over the world. They want to spread it. As I said, it's really good at explaining imperialism because at the start it's they feel like it's the Fire Nation. They feel like it's their duty to expand their knowledge and through their power.
Very much they have so much to teach these nomadic people, these other groups. Yeah, it's very that.
But it of course sort of changes into a more sort of almost Nazi superiority where they try to destroy everybody, including they at one point kill all the airbenders.
Eliminate because they're... Yeah, they're just power hungry, you know, as a nation. That's like, that's the setup for it, you know.
And also just the world building in the show, how every nation is so fleshed out in culture. And the magic system is a very hard magic system. It makes sense. It is almost science, how they've created it.
And the beautiful thing, too, about this world that is built is that it's very compassionate and culturally like you said, diverse and dense world. Like, a lot of the characters are based in like East Asian and Inuit influenced like culture, and it's very like it's very clear who is taking over whom, kind of thing. And it's very you're right, it delves into a lot of real life but making it fantasy, and it's done beautifully.
And the character developments of these, of this,
totally.
Show
the
is
characters are
brilliant.
So beloved. They're so beloved.
Zuko is probably one of the best characters ever.
Yeah, great.
His redemption arc in the second season is brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's also a quick watch. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, only 3 seasons. Yeah. Hot take: shows that have a definitive ending are better.
Honestly,
miniseries are better because they know how to end it. They're always going towards a narrative close rather than Grey's Anatomy 17 seasons later. We're like, what's happening?
You're like, who's even on this show? No, I absolutely agree. Just from a general perspective, that things, when they have an artistic close to them and are meant to be only a certain length, and they get that time to give the audience closure, are almost always better. Like, almost always. Unless they like do a, like, you know, weird thing at the end where it's all a dream, you know, then that maybe is a problem for some people. But if it's done in a loving and good way, then, you know, it makes it that much more satisfying as a watcher, as a viewer.
Exactly. Now, in 2010, Nickelodeon, well, this was probably more happening before 2000 because it was released in 2010.
Yeah, so they actually started work on the project in 2007. which is pretty wild.
So in 2007, Nickelodeon had this idea that they were going to turn this into a live action match.
They were like, we have this hit
and
thing.
What a mistake it was.
They're like, we have this hit thing. Everyone wants to see more. We're going to make it live action. We're going to make it a movie. And originally it was supposed to be a trilogy of movies. It was supposed to be one movie per season as well. Yeah.
Well, to put it in perspective, too, everybody had these big franchises.
Totally.
The Avengers was just getting started. Totally. There was Star Wars was expanding. Harry Potter was huge. Twilight was huge. Hunger Games
was
huge.
It's very the era of multiple movie franchises. Multiple movie
Everybody
franchise.
Was looking for their next hit. What was going to be their film franchise that they could milk for all that was... It was
totally
worth.
And it's pretty funny too, because I'm gonna jump a little bit ahead just to say when it opened at the box office, it opened in second place to just behind Twilight Eclipse. So like, that is the timeline we're working with, folks. Like, it was very right in the middle of that idea that more is more is better, you know. Well, because it means more money, frankly. But, let's be real. Yeah.
So, M. Night Shyamalan, his daughter decided to go as Katara for Halloween. And this got him interested in the story because he started watching the show. And it became a family event.
That's
every week
cute.
That him and his family would sit down to watch Avatar. Aww. So, that was his first introduction to the Avatar world. And so he was signed on to direct. Yeah. Now, it's important to say that the creators were not fans of this idea.
Mm.
So I've got a quote here from DiMartino. Yes. We didn't want it done at all. Before anyone was attached, we didn't want it. If it was going to be done, we wanted to do it. But they weren't going to let us do it. And because of that, they had this big falling out. They originally started on as sort of contributors, as consultants.
That's
to the
usually
film,
what they do when they adapt something. They try to bring on the folks that did it first.
Yeah. But later in the project, they felt a lot of their ideas were being ignored and they left the project.
Smart move. Smart move, honestly, hindsight.
Smart move. Smart distance move. Yourself from this pile of
poop. Whatever's happening here. Just get away from it. Run away as fast as you can. Oh.
A lot of people say, too, that Shyamalan's first draft was a lot better and was stronger, but it was over 2.5 hours long. And so a lot of the issues came from Nickelodeon and Paramount wanting to really cut down the feature and make it shorter. So a lot of the issues, because here's the main issue, honestly, the main issue with this movie, well,
I mean,
besides
there's a whole
casting,
bunch of issues,
I mean,
with this movie,
we'll get into, but narratively, like, a movie can be problematic and still good. So we'll get it, and the casting has more issues than
absolutely,
just race,
yeah.
But we'll get into that a little bit later. The biggest issue with this movie is the exposition.
Totally.
Is the narration. Yeah. The fact that everything is told to us in this
movie. Well, because they don't have time. They simply don't have the time to show you, so they have to have a character explain it or a voiceover explain it, which is what they employ doing it. But it's really funny that you say that Paramount and Nickelodeon are the ones who wanted it to be shorter, because I read some quotes from M. Night that were like, this is the length of my movies. They're always around this length. This is how my storytelling is. Like, this is normal for me. So that's really funny that maybe he's like just saving his ass by saying that. But that's so funny to me. Yeah, because it's an action movie. Sorry, action movies are always over 2 hours. I don't know an action movie I've seen that's less than 2 hours.
Well, they have to be. In order to narratively justify all the action, you need to set it up. But action generally does not continue the story.
No, it's just action.
You don't move forward. It's just
yeah,
action. So you need to give it time.
You have to build it. Yeah.
To tell the story.
You have to nurture it.
And show this action.
Totally.
And let's be real. The action sequences in this movie suck.
Oh, that's a whole other issue. The effects and everything. They're widely hated. That's the thing. Like, everything in this movie
is
bad. It's not done in a way that anybody has deemed is good. You know, you could throw a stone anywhere and someone will be like, that was a bad movie. You'll be like, you're right.
So the show, so everything, exposition is like, it is a, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Abysmal. Sorry.
A necessary, in every narrative piece, exposition is a necessary evil. But you get around this in the show. The show gets around it because it's a children's TV show. So the suspense of disbelief that characters kind of reiterate what they need is sort of, you give it to
it's
them.
It's also,
like, this is for
animated.
Kids.
It's
to...
There's already that like element of disbelief. If you're trying to make something unreal and make it real, you need to do something else. You know, it doesn't work in the same way.
Mm-hmm. And the show is also really good at putting emotion into the exposition. So like Zuko gets mad as he tries to explain himself.
Right.
And that way we are interested in the character's emotion
rather than just the
we
exposition.
Are intaking information.
Yeah. It's not so like today we're going for a walk and then there's a walk and then something else happened. And then I passed by my friend and my friend waved at me. And then I like that is the kind of exposition that's in this movie. It's not, you know, it's feeding the audience information, but not in a way that is furthering the story in any other element besides exposition. Like, it's not, feeding us emotion. It's not feeding us,
We learn about Zuko's banishment by him going to a kid and asking him to tell him the story. A story he already knows.
I know.
What
is that about?
He, in a costume, hidden, goes up to a child and goes, tell me the story of Prince. Do you know the story of Prince Zuko? Can you tell me?
That makes me so sad because I love Dev Patel so much. And Dev Patel, nobody hates this movie more than Dev Patel hates this movie. Like,
oh, Dev, I've been reading quotes of Dev Patel just pooping on this movie.
Like we all famously know how much Robert Pattinson hates Twilight. Dev Patel feels the same way about this movie, but probably more. Like, it's so
good. I'm going to find you this quote of Dev Patel.
Yeah, I'm in love with Dev Patel. If you don't know Dev Patel, you probably don't know Dev Patel because he's hugely iconic. He was in Slumdog Millionaire. That was his rise to fame. He's done a bunch of stuff, and then pretty close to that first flick though, he did this one, which kind of, in a way, he says, I'm paraphrasing here, like ruined big budget stuff for him, which is pretty sad.
Yeah, so this is during the Hollywood Reporter when he's promoting the movie Lion, which he was nominated for an Oscar for. And he goes,
yeah, he was
I don't know what
movie.
I would like to play, but I know what I'm afraid of playing, those big studio movies. After Slumdog, I did a film that was not well received at all. The budget of Slumdog was like the budget of the craft services of this movie. I completely felt overwhelmed by the experience. I felt like I wasn't being heard. That was really scary for me. And that's really when I learned the power of no. The idea of saying no. Listen to that instinct when you read those words for the first time.
I love Dev Patel. He's so sweet.
Yeah, he gets scared off of big budget movies because of this movie.
Yeah, by the way, we should probably talk about the budget. It was $150 million in budget for this movie. For a movie that ran an hour and 40 minutes, they paid $150 million.
Oh. And it was a financial success. Like, we can't undercut it. It made $319.7 million in the box office. So, like, I mean, financially, Nickelodeon came out on top.
Yeah, it actually is one of the top four highest grossing Nickelodeon movies behind, like, SpongeBob, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and The Adventures of Tintin. Like, it's though I also read that they expected it to do even better than it had. And I totally can understand that because of the, like, beloved success that is, like, this TV series, they probably expected even more money. But they
5% on Rotten Tomatoes. 5% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, it's not. I remember watching it, and this is the thing too. Like, it's not just panned by people who are love this series. It's panned by anyone who has seen it.
It's not a bad movie.
In any way good. Roger Ebert said of it, the last Airbender movie is an agonizing experience in every category I can think of, and others are still waiting to be invented. Like, that to me is exactly how everyone feels about it. I just remember watching it and being like, what? Like, so much of it is like, what? Like, it's not it, sis.
Also, just to show some of the cost-cutting issues in this movie that make it so terrible, is one of my favorite and least favorite scenes is the earthbenders are being held in sort of like a camp, like a prison. And
right.
In the TV show, the camp and the prison is on a metal boat in the middle of the ocean, so there's no earth around to keep these earthbenders from fighting back. And that's
totally, which makes sense.
They've been disconnected from their element.
Yeah.
In the movie, they're kept in a valley guarded by the Fire Nation. So
where they're surrounded by everything that makes them powerful.
they've been defeated so much that they no longer want to fight back. But it's just
tired.
They were too cheap to get a boat to put them in the middle of the ocean to actually explain this.
Yeah. I mean, we're at least lucky we got to see them. We could have just heard it from a young kid on the side of the road telling the story. So.
And then the special effects are too good because six of them. You can see this is the most famous clip. I think if you ever hear people talk about Last Airbender in terms of how bad some of the fight choreography is and the special effects are, they will show this clip.
Oh, it's still bad.
It is six earthbenders doing like a kata, and then one rock slowly pushes by the screen, and then another one kicks, and then it hits a Fire Nation person. It is so
incredible.
Bad.
Incredible.
It takes six of them. They are doing nothing. They're just doing it. It's basically dance.
And yeah, they're dancing.
Just be dance choreography at this point because they are not fighting anybody.
No, but they're dancing.
And then one slowly goes across. It is brutal. Oh,
it's bad. It's so bad. Oh no. It's not great.
And also there's also the great scene where Zuko is like the blue dragon or the blue spirit, and he takes Aang from the Fire Nation, and then it's like the two of them fighting all these Fire Nation army off. Mm-hmm. But it's like a full army of extras just standing around, like getting mad, like, acting mad. Well, they have like five actual stunt actors, doing the fighting. But it's only like those five. While the rest of everybody else just
is just like being mad.
So it makes no sense. If there was an actual army, they'd be fighting. Why aren't they fighting? Why are they just standing around?
They're the hype men. Don't you know that every army, Eric, is made up of 95% hype men and then five actual warriors? Because that's what I thought an army was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not right.
Should we get into casting? Should we get into the
casting? Sure. Let me roll up my sleeves for this one.
Why are they all white?
That is the thing here. It's not only that they're all white, it's also that...
And they're bad.
They're also bad. But it's also that, like, the ones that aren't white, why are they the villains? That's the thing here. Like, yeah.
Also, why are they... Okay,
like, hello?
Okay, here's the thing. First off, they were originally all going to be white. Because you know that... Dev Patel was not the original Zuko. The original Zuko was early aughts heartthrob Jesse McCartney.
I don't want another pretty face. I love him.
Just want you in your beautiful soul.
Yeah, no. But yeah.
So it was supposed to... A, all four nations originally were going to be white
first off,
people.
There's that.
And then, okay, so Jesse McCartney has some scheduling issues, or he later said it was political issues. I don't know.
He's got some issues
with it. And they replace him with Dev Patel.
Who we love. We love Dev Patel.
Who we love.
Him. He's great.
And you know what? Here's the thing. Like, Zuko is... I'm not upset about them casting a person of color in the role of Zuko, because... if they did the full trilogy, Zuko is the best character.
Well, that's true, yeah.
But the thing, too, is the whole issue with this movie is that it's East Asian.
Yes.
Everything's very East Asian and inspired, except for the Water Nation, which is sort of a mix of Mongolian and...
Inuit inspired. Yeah.
Inuit. Thank you. Yes, Inuit inspired. They're all cast white, but then even in the Fire Nation, they're, like, South Asian. Like, they're...
Yeah,
South Asian.
Totally.
But they're all dressed as if they are Japanese.
It's very weird.
So they don't even look like the culture they're representing. Yeah. It's this East Asian culture, and yet they all are South Asian. And it'd be one thing if you just did the Bridgerton thing and everybody was everything.
Right. And it's just like, I guess it doesn't
but
matter.
But it's not that either.
But it's also, yeah.
It's not that either, because everybody else is white.
I know.
And they matched all the South Asian actors to be in the same nation, so they did care about race. There was thought put into race.
And that's the thing. Even though in a trilogy that Zuko ends up being, you know, one of the best characters, we only see this movie. That's all we see. And in this movie, the bad guys, the Fire Nation, the ones who are the colonizers, are all, like, why are these the folks that are the folks of color? Why are these the East Asian folks? Why are these, you know? And then everyone else is fucking white. In the series,
well,
it's not like that.
To be fair, all the lead actors are white, and then all the
extras
you're
right.
Asian,
well,
which is even more problematic.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's such a problem that, like, I have a really great quote here. It's by Michael Lee from RaceBending.com, and he said about the movie, to take this incredibly loved children's series and really distort not only the ethnicity of the individual characters, like we're discussing, but the message of acceptance and cultural diversity that the original series advocated is a huge blow. And he called for a boycott of the film, which then inspired the Media Action Network for Asian Americans to do the same. And so all these folks from these communities who saw this movie, they called for people to boycott the film because, like, it casting was such an issue. Like, there's, like, it is so bad. The whitewashing in this is so bad.
And here's the thing. We could say that it was problematic and still say they were good actors, but they're not.
No, but that's also the thing. Like, a lot of folks hate their performances as well. like again, going back to Roger Ebert, everything is bad. There's nothing here that is that great. It is not good.
Like, Jackson Rathbone, who hilariously, too, was both in the first box office grossing movie at the time and the second, because he's also
that's
in
true.
Twilight, who plays Zuko, is so flat in this role. And also, it could be the writing. I will give it the writing, too, was brutal, because... Sokka is like the comic relief of the TV show, and they ripped all comedic moments out of him. It is the most flat portrayal of Sokka. Sokka's part in the TV show
is to be funny, to lighten
the mood.
He's like a joker.
And then, okay, so Nicole Peltz, who played Katara in this movie, was described by Shyamalan as the best child actor he had seen since Haley Joel Osment.
No, that's not right.
She's
that's not
brutal
true.
In this movie.
And Haley Joel Osment was incredible.
She's a child actor, but still.
Child actors are hard. But you know what, baby? We've seen good child actors. Like, it can be done.
Now,
It wasn't.
There is rumors that she's actually the daughter of, like, a really rich person.
Well, that makes sense.
She may allegedly bought her way into this.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have used my funds that way. Not for this movie.
And then Noah Ringer, first off, they call him Ong through
the
whole
movie. Yeah,
that's
weird. That is true.
There's so much butchering of, like,
just like the language, that the world that was so well crafted. Yeah.
They call it an Agni Ki, not an Agni Kai. Yeah. If you watch the actual TV show, it's Agni Kai. But Noah Ringer, as I'm going to call him Aang, because he doesn't deserve to be called Aang. He was a Taekwondo black belt, and they sent a video to the studio, and he got cast off of this video because he had no hair, and he looks exactly how Shyamalan believed Aang to look. No acting audition required.
They were like, look at this kid doing Taekwondo. There you go.
He was cast 100% off his stunts. That's and you know what? I get it. You know, as a dancer, I get mad in movies when I see bad dancers playing
dancers.
Yeah,
that's fair.
But you still got to be able to act.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I personally can forgive almost anyone doing anything else not as good in a movie if they're doing good acting. You know, I'm quicker to forgive, like, someone who's not a singer who's singing but is doing great acting. I'm quick to forgive someone who's not a dancer who's dancing but doing great acting. If someone's doing bad acting, I don't know how you can come back from that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when I watch something and someone's a bad actor, I'm like, I don't want this. I don't want any of it. Like, to me, none of it's salvageable, almost.
Yeah, so it just goes to show you the care they put in the, like, I just don't get it. I don't know why they cast, like, this white child to be in a movie when he can't act.
Yeah, yeah, it's not as if.
There's probably.
But that's the thing. Like, I was reading more M. Night quotes, and he was like, oh, like, Okay, so to go back to the real quick, to go back to the studio's defense of, like, this whole when the boycott was happening of the movie because of the casting and whatnot. They said 23 credited speaking roles are in the movie, and more than half of them are from folks who are Asian and Pan-Asian actors. Which, like, sure, that's great. But you didn't cast anybody in the main roles. When someone goes to see a movie, they're looking at the main roles. You know what I mean? You cast who? Dev Patel? That's it? We stand Dev Patel. But guess what? That's not enough. Like, it's... And I also was reading some quotes from M. Night Shyamalan, and he, like ardently defended this movie from these quotes that I was reading. And part of it was, like, they had casting that was for, like, kind of not like open casting, but like more open ethnicity casting. They were like, we kind of want to see everybody. And then he said that the people that they chose were the ones who did the best. And I was like, but where, you know, that's the thing. But where,
and as I've said, if it was the Bridgerton thing where it's like truly trying to be colorblind casting, that's still problematic.
It's a problem for sure.
Things, but at least I could understand it. This is not that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like they pulled a Bridgerton where they're like, we're gonna cast everybody as everybody, but also we're gonna make it weird about race for a scene and then just pretend it didn't happen.
Bridgerton tangent. It was fine until they tried.
Yeah,
the
second they addressed it and made it weird, it was bad. Like, just leave it be, and it would have been fine. But anyways, yeah, they didn't do any of that. They just instead borrowed from a bunch of cultures and folks, and then they were like, this is the best we could do. And you're like, you had $150 million, where did it go? You know, I don't know. It's just it goes to show that sometimes people who are good at things are not good at everything. And, like, just because you have,
no,
you are, like, critically acclaimed for something doesn't mean you might be, you know, critically hated for another. And that is, like, a great example of what this is. Like, you can't just throw money at something and talent at something. You have to, sometimes it has to be good, you know?
Also, new point, the pacing of this movie.
Yeah, it's shit, because the writing is bad, Eric. Like, this movie is riddled with poor writing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, literally the first thing they teach you when you go to any writing class for anything, especially TV and film, they're like, you need to show us, not tell us. That's the first thing. I learned it in grade 12 writer's craft, by the way, also. But I've heard it reiterated time and time again every time I take a class in one of these things. And it literally, you have to show, not tell. This movie, all it does is tell you and then shows a bit of action that's bad. That's all.
Also, yeah. So the first, like, around 45 minutes are the majority of the first season. And then the last 50 minutes is all like the final battle in the Northern Water Tribe. So the pacing is way off. They needed to spend way more time going into the emotional depth of when Aang learns that his whole people have been exterminated. Right? Oh my gosh. That scene is done so poorly in the movie, and it's brilliantly done in the TV show. The internal conflict that Katara has in the TV show, where she doesn't want to tell Aang, she doesn't know how to let him know, and she keeps trying to hint at it, but without telling him explicitly, and then finally he learns. That's in the TV show. It's brilliantly done. And then in the movie, it's done just so fast. He like sees the bones and he gets
terrible.
Upset.
Yeah,
it's just not good. It's so
in any way
poorly done.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like everything in this movie was trying to cut a corner or simplify something that you need. It needed more care. It needed more time. It just lost the heart of it. Is what it did. Like when you're making something, if you lose the heart, you're done. And they didn't. Yeah. They didn't have that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they lost it somehow along the way.
I am very, very grateful that this movie, for the most part, hasn't tarnished the reputation of the TV show.
Oh, totally. Well, they're so different. People don't even equate the two, you know? People, like again, this was supposed to be a trilogy. They canned that idea. They're like, not doing that again. Not going through that. But, which is interesting.
They took the money and ran.
Bye-bye. But it's interesting, though, because...
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
It's interesting, though, because Netflix recently has picked up some of the pieces, and they're planning a new live-action remake of the animated series. So they're doing it, but they're doing it, you know, in their Netflix, like, long series way.
But they're making the same mistakes. Mm. They've had too many issues with the creators. Yeah. So... DiMartino and Konietzka have left. I hope I'm saying their names right. I'm so sorry if I'm not. They've left the project.
Yeah.
And now they have created, they've created Avatar Studios, in which they're going to expand the animated universe.
That's true. Which is great.
Which is amazing.
So great.
Learning about this, people are saying they're cautiously optimistic because they did expand the universe of the animated TV show with The Legend of Korra, which is a sequel series. And Korra is... The best words that I ever heard about it is that it's a beautiful disaster.
Yeah.
In the fact that it is nowhere near the level of brilliance that Avatar The Last Airbender is, but people are still so thankful it happened because it did expand the universe.
Yeah.
Korra has its issues. But once again, money is the main issue with Korra, because what happened, you know how I said shows with closed endings are better? This is what happened with Korra. Korra was supposed to be a single season, one and done. The first season of Korra is great. And then what happened is they kept renewing
it. It's so hard when that happens, but there's nothing else to give.
But also also getting their budget cuts. So they weren't planning these long arcs with Korra. They were all little arcs that all led into the next. So they kept trying to, they would finish it off. That would make sense. And then have to be like, we have to.
But actually, we have to like make it happen again and more and different. Yeah.
So that's, I think, the main problem with Korra is that they just didn't know when it was going to end. They kept getting, you can do more, but here's less money.
That's the thing. Beautiful world building shows, you like, it's only good when there's an ending in sight. Like if it goes on forever, then you're just grasping at straws at some point. At that point, you're just like, what else can we do and what else can we add? But the only shows that work when they're open ended like that is like a classic sitcom or like stuff where the everyday doesn't change, but the minutia of like episode to episode changes. It's hard. Like you need a bigger arc for this kind of stuff.
My hope with the Avatar Studios is that they'll do new series. I think most people are hoping that they'll do Avatar Kyoshi as the new Avatar, which would go back in
time. That would be really cool. Aang. Like a prequel feeling.
It's two or three Avatars before
Aang. That would be cool.
They already have books based on her, so it would be actually based off of source material they've already
created. Which would make it easy for them then.
Also, I hope they do more movies, like animated movies, so that they have more like created arcs rather than trying to just constantly create new content. But yeah, Netflix, I think, has kind of shot themselves in the foot because a lot of the fans are upset because the creators have left the project.
And that's the thing. Like, if not to be like this person, but if creators leave a project, there's got to be a reason. You know what I mean? Like, as an outside mm-hmm. viewer, it never looks good to me if a creator leaves a project that I know that they're passionate about.
But it's a more money, more problems issue, right? Netflix is putting so much money, so they want so much more say.
Of course they
do.
The more
money, the more people are throwing their opinions.
It's such a hard thing. It's such a hard thing.
Yeah.
But again, more money, more problems.
I hope it's good.
Yeah, more money, more problems. This is a perfect example. This movie is a perfect example of more money, more problems.
More money, more problems.
Because they had so much. There it is. They had so much money.
Are we going to become those people that try to title the episode during the podcast?
No. We never will.
Avatar, the last money bender.
Avatar, the last of the money, of the studio's money, except it's now Nickelodeon, so they had so much money, so that's not true. But yeah, it's shocking to me. It's this movie gives me, someone like me, a lot of hope, where it's like, you can be the best of the best. Like, people can think that of you.
The next Spielberg.
You can be
the next
Spielberg. And Spielberg's the best.
And still.
And you can still do this. And everyone will be like, no.
You can still butcher
that's
it.
That's the thing. Like, it is so humbling. And it makes me, somebody who isn't, like, done nothing, you know, but will do something someday. It makes you feel so good.
Don't say you've done nothing. You have two podcasts, Ms.
That's
Carly.
True. I mean, of Eric, we don't have a $150 million budget, baby. But, you know, when I do get that budget.
You don't know. They don't know the quality. You don't know the quality of this new microphone.
That's true. It costs $149 million. I didn't say we had $150. But yeah, it's just, it makes me be like, you know what? Anyone can do anything. And that's a really beautiful thing. Because it means you can do something that's garbage and bounce back from it. It means you can do something that's amazing. And then the next day, you do something that's shit. It's just being human, and it's the best. It's so crazy.
All right, my friends. I think that has brought us. We have covered the topic.
Back to Earth. Back to our time.
Let us know. Go to our Instagram and let us know what you thought.
Tell us. Tell us. Yeah.
Go watch the
movie. Oh, my God, don't.
Or don't. Boycott it. I don't know.
Just don't watch it.
I don't know
just
what the answer is.
Just don't watch it and pretend
illegally download it so that you don't give the creators
God,
any money.
Oh, God, they don't deserve money for this. It's just a nightmare.
All right.
All righty.
Miss Carly, do you have your pop picks for the week?
You know what? I sure do. I'm going to repeat a pop pick that's been my pop pick for a long time because it's fully out. Taylor Swift, baby. I am listening to it on repeat. I can't help myself. I won't stop. I can't stop. Taylor Swift. Taylor's Fearless is incredible. It is like so friggin' good. It boggles my mind. But I'll give you another pop pick as well. My other pop pick is I watched, and this is a good one. This is an oldie but a goldie. I watched, for the very first time in its entirety, I watched Muppets Take Manhattan. And it slaps. I know that people are trying to cancel Miss Piggy, and I understand why. They're trying to cancel Miss Piggy because she's always too into Kermit. She, like, hits him and stuff. she follows him around and stuff. Yeah. Okay. But I'm like, I get it. I understand why. But also, it's, like... Not to be that girl, but it seems like Kermit is into it. But anyways, they're puppets. I don't know. I stan Miss Piggy. She is like a boss ass bitch. She's independent. She doesn't need no man, but she's obsessed with Kermit the Frog. And I just love it. It's great flick. It's really silly 80s movie. Yeah, they go to New York. They try to make it on Broadway. That's literally the show, the movie. It's great. I don't know why I hadn't seen it in its entirety until now, but that's my pop pick of the week.
I mean, that's all our dreams, making it on Broadway.
Know. We're all just little Kermit the Frogs going with our group of Muppet friends to New York saying, please, can you put on my show? That's not how he talks, but it's more like, Kermit the Frog, will you put on my show? More like that. I'm not good at it, but. Eric, what are your pop picks of the week, baby?
I've been rewatching. Oh, I've got two. I've been rewatching on Disney Plus. Ugly Betty.
Oh, I've never seen all of it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's cute. I'm rewatching it. America Ferrera.
She's a doll. Who doesn't love her? Yeah.
Amazing. She's so cute. I also watch her in Superstore.
Yeah.
Which
everyone loves that show. I still haven't seen it. My sister is obsessed with that too. Yeah, I think
it.
I will.
But that's not my pop pick. My second pop pick is I watched on also on Disney Plus, Feud, which is about Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. It is very before hashtag.
Is it good? I do want to watch it.
It is very good.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So those are my two pop
love
picks
it.
For the week.
Love it, love it.
And also Avatar The Last Airbender.
I mean,
go
that's
watch
a
it.
Given. Everyone should go watch that TV show, not the movie.
Not the movie.
Hashtag not the movie.
That's what this episode is called. Hashtag not the movie.
Hashtag not the movie.
All right, friends, we are going to wrap it up. Please like, subscribe, rate, give us a review.
You know how to do.
Anything that helps the algorithm, because we are all praying to the algorithm gods trying to get our podcast moved up in the world. So please help us out. I beg you. No, I'm just kidding. I don't
Thanks
beg.
For listening. Thanks for being here with all us. Right. You are the best. Bye.
Peace.
Bye.